It's Friday, the 10th of April, day 20. It's funny how one loses track of time without the external stimuli of organisational life. I've just realised, for example, not only that today is Friday, but it's Good Friday, and that accordingly this is the Easter weekend. Once upon a time, all kinds of preparations would be being made. My wife would have made a simnel cake. We would have arranged a family barbecue or some other kind of get-together, and so on. But this year, we'll be doing all that stuff over Zoom or some other channel. It's a staggeringly beautiful day, and it's the quietest Good Friday I've ever experienced since I came to live in the UK over 50 years ago. In fact, the last time Good Friday was this quiet was when I was a kid growing up in the 1950s in Holy Catholic Ireland. Ireland then was a bit like Poland without communism. It was dominated by the Catholic Church in its traditional patronising, sanctimonious manner. It was governed by politicians who were enthralled to that church and whose instinctive gesture when confronted by a cardinal was a servile cringe. It was a country inhabited by devout citizens for whom religion was indeed the opium of the people. And like Poland, Ireland was backward and broke. Accordingly, on Good Friday in 1950s Ireland, nothing, and I mean nothing, moved. Even the pubs were closed. There was a gloomy three-hour service in churches in the afternoon, in which crucifixes were covered in purple cloths. As kids, we hated those services, which seemed interminable and incomprehensible. And of course, it goes without saying that there would be no games, no street football, no playground activities that day. After all, Christ had died on the cross for us, and it behoved the children of the faithful to mourn accordingly. There is one Good Friday, though, that I remember especially vividly. It was the day my father brought the new car from Dublin. We were staying at my grandparents in Mayo for Easter, and he had gone to Dublin by train the previous day to pick up the first span-new car that we had ever owned. Our previous family vehicles were ninth-hand wrecks, and my mother had obligingly written off the last of them while driving to daily mass on a morning when there was extensive black ice on the hill down into town. The car had slid gracefully downhill and into the wall at the bottom. Mercifully, though, Ma had emerged shocked but unscathed from the wreckage. There then followed about 6 weeks of solemn family conclaves about whether we could afford to buy a new car, and if so, what make. This was a bigger deal then than it would be now. We were not well off, and cars were, relatively speaking, much more expensive in the 1950s than they are today. The big issue was whether we would buy a Fiat or a Morris Minor. This was a bit tricky because the Fiat dealer was a good friend of my parents, and it might be difficult if they did not give him their custom. But in the end, my father must have taken a deep breath and opted for the British product, a Morris Minor, which was Britain's answer to the Volkswagen, the people's car. This was what my father was driving from Dublin on Good Friday. I remember vividly the intense excitement of the prospect of his arrival, but tinged with fierce anxiety about whether he would arrive before 3 o'clock, when we would be dragged off to church for the blasted service. My grandparents' house was in the centre of a smallish village, a one-horse town without the horse. From mid-morning onwards, I sat on the doorstep watching the road. The village baked in the sunshine. There wasn't a soul to be seen. Dogs slept by the roadside, waking only to scratch themselves occasionally. Even the daily ritual of the arrival of the bus from Ballina didn't happen. It was, after all, Good Friday, and good Catholics didn't travel on such a day. I didn't have a watch, and so regularly went into the kitchen to check the time. Noon came. 1 o'clock came. 2 o'clock. 2:30. Still no sign. And then at about 2:45, a gleaming little black Morris Minor hove into view and pulled up outside the door, with Dow looking smug, though slightly knackered. I scrambled in excitedly and was immediately struck by a special odour, what we always subsequently called the new car smell. And then my mother, who seemed distinctly uninterested in our new toy, hustled me and my siblings off to church. I remember nothing of that service. But, as Bernard Levin said in another context, I on honeydew had fed and drunk the milk of paradise. And that, sadly, is how I became a petrolhead.